This is the Oanda Podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
Welcome back to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, brought to you with the Jazz FM Business Breakfast. I'm Johnny Hart. Each week we review the stories that made the business and market headlines. And what a week it was.
I am announcing today that the United States will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal. We will be instituting the highest level of economic sanction.
This organization can now move on. The last very big fine or conduct issue that this bank had to face has been concluded.
We expect that the UK economy is going to pick back up. We think in the end that there will need to do some increases in interest rates over time, but at a pretty gentle pace.
And it's hello again to Oanda Senior Market Analyst Craig Earlham. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Johnny. I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. We've just heard President Trump, Bank of England Governor Mark Carney, and RBS CEO Ross McEwen. It was a tumultuous week. What was your moment of the week?
I think it has to be the announcement by Donald Trump with respect to the Iran nuclear deal. I think no one's entirely shocked, but the fact that they've actually followed through with it is quite significant. And in a lot of situations when it comes to geopolitics, I think markets have become a little bit immune to certain things. In the early days of Trump's reign, the North Korea spat, markets were getting a little bit jittery, and then they slowly wore off as it continued. With this, you would have typically expected more of a reaction, maybe some risk off being seen in the markets. But instead, it was actually very much focused on oil. And again, that comes as no surprise to an extent as well, because Iran is the third largest OPEC producer. So anything that could potentially lead to them producing less oil is typically going to have an impact on oil markets. And what we saw in the aftermath and in the lead up to, because this had been highly speculated in the days before, was oil prices rising to 3.5 year highs, close now to $80 a barrel for Brent crude and above $70 a barrel in WTI crude. And now the question is going to be asked, how far reaching are these sanctions going to be, given that they are unilaterally being imposed by the US? How much of an impact is it going to have on Iranian output? And how much are the Saudis now going to step up, along with their allies in OPEC and also Russia, to fill the void left by it in order to avoid distorting the market anymore? So I think this is all questions that are going to be asked. But now what we've seen is oil prices rising. Energy stocks got a boost, so we saw indices in the US and Europe get a boost as well, particularly the FTSE, which has a high exposure, but generally no risk-off appetite, which was interesting.
And of course we saw oil prices continuing to soar, despite the comments of US Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, who said he didn't expect major oil price hikes because other countries, you mentioned Saudi Arabia, of course, would increase output to offset those losses. So what's going to happen? We don't know.
It's so difficult to say because there's so many moving parts. There's the potential for the US shale industry with oil at these prices to boost output themselves, and they have been now for some months. There is the potential for OPEC and non-OPEC nations as part of this production cut to boost output, because they initially cut output by 1.8 million barrels a day. So there's plenty of scope there for them to reduce or end this production cut because of the impact this could have on Iranian output. But then there is the other flip side of that, as are OPEC countries and Russia and other non-OPEC producers enjoying prices at these levels? So are they actually happy with this for oil to experience more of a supply drainage, and or if it's going to help to support prices, especially when Saudi Arabia is looking to IPO its own Saudi oil company, Saudi Aramco?
Particularly the Russians as well, because there were some people suggesting that Vladimir Putin didn't actually mind the announcement from Donald Trump about the withdrawal of the deal, because he'd recognised that there'd be plenty more in the coffers for Russia PLC.
Well, exactly. And when we look at the Russian companies that are involved in the production cut, a lot of them weren't particularly happy, as was reported at the time, to be cutting production as part of this. This is something that was agreed overall, and it seems that this was maybe potentially a little above their heads. So this could be a win-win situation for the likes of Saudi Arabia and Russia at the expense of Iran. But again, there's so many moving parts in this. It's so difficult.
Indeed. And we've still got the situation with other geopolitical events, such as the US embassy moving to Jerusalem, which might cause further problems. And of course, North Korea is on the horizon, which might be a plus rather than a minus. We don't know. The other effect of these rising oil prices more into the medium term is it could affect inflation. And obviously, we'll talk about the Bank of England announcement earlier on in the week. But inflation could suddenly take off, and that could have a major effect globally, couldn't it?
And that's something that I think central banks and politicians everywhere are going to be focused quite clearly on. Oil has been on quite a run over the last year, so that is going to factor into inflation rates. The question is, are central banks going to look at this as a transitory effect on inflation as we have before and allow it to pass? We saw, for example, when oil prices fell from $120 a barrel to around $30 a barrel, this had disinflationary impacts, and central banks were more than happy to allow that to naturally fall out of the calculation, the annual comparison. So if we do see this spike and it does have inflationary impacts, for one, central banks may not mind because it'll help make it even easier for them to at least claim they are achieving their aims of 2% inflation when we're looking at the Eurozone, for example, or Japan. And the other thing as well, for if there is any overshoot or fears of overshoot, then they can at least look to the fact that it is a temporary move. But I think we'd have to see a much bigger move still in oil for that to happen. And I think a lot of this is now priced in.
Okay, let's turn to the UK and that announcement, which we foresaw this time last week. The Bank of England deciding to keep interest rates on hold. And we had Governor Mark Carney on in the show earlier on. And he was in a slightly defensive mood, wasn't he, really? Because there were people suggesting, come on, you are a very unreliable chap, because the number of times you've suggested that rates are going to go up, then you've changed your mind and they've come back again, then you've changed your mind. This has happened half a dozen times, I think, in Governor Carney's tenure as Governor of the Bank of England. And he looked a little bit defensive, do you think?
Yes, absolutely. The unreliable boyfriend, I think, is what he was being called. I think it's very difficult, for one. This is not a normal time to be a central banker. And how many of these central banks have been called unreliable over the past 5 years? How many times have they been questioned about the whether forward guidance is actually useful anymore? Questioned whether they are accurate in their forecast, whether there's any use in their forecast. And all of this, I think, is a bit unfair, because none of them are pretending to be able to predict the future. What they're trying to do is provide some scope for the markets to be able to respond without causing unnecessary shocks. So the forecast which they were giving back in February were based on the current set of data which they had to hand and the assumptions which they were making. They couldn't predict that Donald Trump was going to try and start a trade war with China and everyone else. They couldn't predict that the beast from the east was going to have a detrimental impact on the UK economy and other Western economies towards the end of February and in March. They can only respond to what they have and use it to create their models, or to put the data into their models and make their new assumptions. And if their new assumptions are now that inflation is going to be slightly lower because of the current set of data they have, and GDP is going to be slightly lower, and we're coming off the back of some weaker data, and the surveys are looking a little softer, which creates that extra level of uncertainty, and we've got Brexit, which
I mean, I think it is more to do with Brexit, to be honest.
Well, I think Brexit in its actual essence is uncertain, because we don't know what a trade deal is going to look like, if there's going to be one, if there's going to be a customs union, if we're going to be part of the single market, what's going to happen with the Northern Irish border. We can't sit here and pretend that the Bank of England should be able to accurately forecast how all of this is going to play out based on the data which they have. They can just do what they can with the best they can with what they have. So I think it's quite unfair, the fact that people keep questioning the Bank of England, and Mark Carney is constantly having to be on the defensive because sometimes their minds are going to change. And I think they've made the right decision on this. Like I say, the data hasn't been good, and why would they want to force the issue now when in 3 months they'll have a much clearer insight about whether this was a temporary shock or whether there is something more to it. They'll have much clearer insight on how the Brexit negotiations are going and whether a deal looks likely. And that is very important. So I think they've made the right decision. But to be honest, I thought they made the wrong decision initially to try and push it, bring it forward to May.
And it wouldn't have made any difference whatsoever in a positive way if they'd raised interest rates, would it? It would have only been negative.
Exactly. I can't see much positive from raising interest rates in May because I always just think to myself, well, what if it comes to August and it looks like there's going to be no deal and that has a small shock to the economy? Do they have to cut interest rates? Then I think that's far more embarrassing than delaying the decision myself.
Yeah. We've seen sterling recover a little. It was hitting some lows earlier on because of those comments from the Bank of England. But there's some suggesting now that rates are likely to go up in August after all.
Well, I think the timing is has always been what this is about, and markets can get too fixated upon the timing. Mark Carney still stuck to his judgment, and the Bank of England, I should say, stuck to the judgment that the assumption that there could be 3 rate hikes over the next 3 years, they're comfortable with that. The assumption that the markets have priced in right now, that 2 rate hikes roughly over the next 18 months, they're comfortable with that. That hasn't changed, despite the fact that it may be August rather than May. So I think we in the markets and we in the media can get too fixated on the specific timing of this. So yes, cable's dropped off a lot right now, but while that is partly to do and is being driven primarily by this sudden shift from the May meeting, I think it also has a lot to do with the fact that we had a very strong rally in cable based upon the fact that we were making good progress with Brexit, and all of a sudden people started to come around to the idea of a rate hike. We are going to get a rate hike this year. I'm pretty convinced about that, unless something takes a massive turn for the worse. But then again, what if Brexit negotiations do fall apart? What if the economy suddenly stalls quite dramatically? Are we meant to blame the central bank for not foreseeing that as well? Of course not. We look at what we've got, and right now it looks like we're going to see a rate hike this year. I think it could even be November, but if it's August, so be it.
This is good stuff for you guys, though, isn't it? Because uncertainty in markets is actually of great benefit to many people in the business.
Well, I think when we're looking at the markets, people like volatility, right? Mm. So I think when we are seeing quite good levels of volatility right now. The pound, like I say, has been went up to around, I think, 142 or so, and is now back much lower than that. It's off around 5% from its peak. We've seen plenty of volatility in the dollar as a whole, so the dollar against the Canadian dollar, the Australian dollar just fallen to multi-month lows against the greenback, the euro as well. We look into the commodity space, plenty of volatility in oil on the back of this, the Iran story. I think it's quite an interesting time, and in the US as well, like we can't ignore what's happening in the
fascinating
equity
times.
Markets yeah. right now, because we have seen a little bit of a peak this week. We could actually be on, I'm not sure what the levels are at this time of recording, but this we could be on for a perfect week in the US, 5 consecutive positive days, and I think that could be the first time since the end of January when we saw this initial sell-off. But again, like these are very interesting times because we've just come off the back of a very strong earnings season, and yet the Dow, the S&P are not that far from the lows which they hit in the aftermath of the correction. So again, you have to wonder what other things are hurting people's sentiment when we're seeing double-digit earnings growth.
We don't often talk about Italian politics in relation to markets, but there were some significant political moments which may affect Italy this week.
Yes, there are. It looks as though after 2 months of, I think it's 2 months now since the actual election, we might actually be making some headway in forming an actual coalition government. But this is going to come very much to the dismay of the Euro area leaders, because you'll remember last year, they were very much patting themselves on the back for how they defeated the populist parties, this victory for Europe, this victory for the Eurozone, this clear support throughout the region for what they are doing. And now in Italy, we've got two parties who are in coalition talks who could, by Sunday, the Five Star Movement I'm talking about on the left and the League on the right, These are both two populist parties who on Sunday could actually form a coalition government, Eurozone's third largest economy, driven by populists, both of whom at one point in recent years have called for either a referendum on their membership of the euro area or an outright leaving the euro area. So this is very, very bad news because they are not going to align themselves with the values of the euro area. They want to increase their fiscal deficit, more spending. They basically want to undo the changes that were imposed by the autocratic governments under Mario Monti in Italy. Pension reforms, for example, they raise the pension age. They want to reverse that. The League wants to cut taxes to a flat rate of 15%, which would clearly go raise the deficit and go against the budget rules. You have the Five Star Movement want to increase spending as well. And there's also fears as well that what it will do politically for the region in terms of the direction of travel, because I believe both in the past have called for sanctions against Russia to be dropped. Now, that very much goes against what the EU is doing as a unit right now. So this could be troublesome for the euro area. And like I say, they were clearly far too quick to pat themselves on the back last year.
Does this help the UK's case at all when it comes to our Brexit negotiations?
It's very difficult to say right now, because I remember this conversation was taking place as well last year around the time of the French election, when Marine Le Pen was making headway in the first round of the votes, and people were saying, would she be good for us or would she be bad for us? Would Macron be good for us? Because we want stability as part of the talks. We don't want a collapse of the euro area. We just want to leave it peacefully.
Yeah, and but he wants to get all the businesses based in the UK to move to Paris, though, doesn't he? So it works both ways.
Yeah, it does, exactly. In terms of what's in the interest of these parties, I think it's very difficult to say, because how much influence will the Italian government have in the actual overall making of the deal? They are one of many countries and they are not the largest and they are not the most influential. You would imagine that they will sympathise with the UK a lot more than the incumbent would. Whether that will help us, I'm not too sure, especially considering how far we are already now down the line. I think what it does do, though, is it gives the Eurozone a headache, because now other leaders, the French, the Germans, they're going to be looking at the UK and thinking, we really can't afford to be nice to them, because what if we give them a very nice deal and all of a sudden Five Star Movement, the League, go back to Italy and say, look what deal they've had to leave, we could have this. And it's hard to see a scenario in which they're not trying to gradually drum up support for a referendum of their own. And I truly believe that the reason why they didn't campaign on this is because at this moment in time there is no desire within Italy, within the electorate, for Italy to leave the Eurozone. Surprisingly, when you consider everything, there is no desire for it. So I think that's why they dropped these campaign promises, because they decided it's more important that we get into Parliament and then we can come back to this later on and try and rally the troops from within Parliament than it is to stick to what has previously been their core message and get nowhere near.
Before I let you go, Craig, let's have a brief look at the week ahead. What will be the outstanding things to look out for next few days?
Well, of course, I think the aftermath of the talks over the weekend in Italy is going to play a part at the start of the week, particularly in Europe. Apart from that, I think Tuesday is going to be a really big day. There's a lot of economic data that we have out, the UK jobs report, the Eurozone flash GDP figures, US retail sales. I think there's a lot to come on Tuesday, which should make it very interesting. And then we've got a scattering of more economic data across the course of the week. So I think it should be another interesting one.
Okay, Craig, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Craig Earlham, Senior Market Analyst at Oanda. And don't forget, this podcast is now available on iTunes and on Android.
Was the Oanda podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.